everyone, and welcome back to the Ontario Society of Occupational Therapists New OTs on the Block podcast, a space where we discuss everything that new occupational therapy graduates need to know to transition into the workforce. My name is Lindsay, and I'm back today with Brett, Leia, Emily, Emma, and Maya for part two of the new grad Q&A session. If you haven't already, I encourage you to go back and listen to part one, where the new grads introduce themselves and talk about the exam and applying for jobs. For part two, we will be covering more general questions related to the experience of being a new grad and making that transition. This is a really big transition coming up for all of us, and I'm really nervous for it. You guys were in this position 1 year ago today, so how did you find that transition from being in school to working, and how did you take care of yourself during this time of uncertainty?
Did you want to go?
You can go ahead.
Okay, I'll go. This one's an interesting one, because I wasn't expecting the transition that I went through, because I had from my perspective, I had a tough transition in the fact that I couldn't take my mind off of work. I think that's what I struggled with most, was that when I got my clients started in, I think it was mid-October of last year, I took everything home with me. And so I was like I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. I was always constantly thinking about like, what do I have to do? What do I have to learn? Because I didn't feel like I had the confidence to go in there and just learn on the fly, learn on the spot. Although I had a really strong supportive team around me, the way my job works, it's like I have to phone everybody or I have to email everybody to get that assistance. They're not just next to me. So it's that extra step that you have to overcome that does take a little bit away from your ability to do so. But when I did ask for help, it was a big help, right? It did provide that guidance. But I think over time, I just had to convince myself to show up every day, be open to being uncomfortable, making mistakes, and just learning as you went, right? And being okay with taking the time. I think I went through a transition of trying to learn the clinical aspect of my job, but also learning the business side of it, right? Like tracking all my billable hours, learning the like insurance process and the med legal process. So that was a double whammy that I think just overwhelmed me in the beginning, because there were so many unknowns. I had to focus on learning the med legal, but then I was like, but I don't even know how to do this treatment, or I don't even know how to do this assessment. I don't have time to learn it. So it was a big transition for me, but I think showing up every day, and it did get easier over time, and I reached out to a lot of like classmates during that process to just get things off my chest. I think it's getting better now, and I'm feeling comfortable, I'm feeling good. And I was forewarned going into my company that it takes about 6 months to a year to feel fully comfortable. I'm getting to the 6 month mark and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good and it's only getting better. So that's kind of my transition. But I think reaching out for your friends, your classmates, plan things outside of work, especially in private, probably public as well. Emily can speak to that. If possible, but yeah, like plan things outside of work just to take your mind off of it through that transition. And, you know, remember your occupational balance too, because that's pretty important. I mean, we teach it a lot, but take what you teach your clients and apply it to your own life, because I mean, that's going to get you through some pretty tough times. So
I agree, Brett.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm also in community, not in private practice, but in schools. So all the kids I'm working with are children. And I knew where it was, where I wanted to be, because I've always wanted to work with kids, but I did feel like I didn't have the skill set to work with kids. And I think that it was a big kind of hit to my confidence when I first started. And I was like, look at all these great OTs around me in the community who know so much about everything. And I'm here. How did I get hired? I don't belong here. Like, it was a huge imposter syndrome, I guess, sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's so real. It's so real. But like Brett said, it's okay to ask for help. Like someone said previously, you're not going to know everything out of school, because OT is so broad. So it's okay to ask for help. I also found it to be a hard transition, because in community, like Brett said, there's so much homework to take home. You're kind of, you know, your work doesn't end when you leave the school at 3:30, you still have to call parents, you still have to write your report, you still have to call vendors. And I think kind of finding my own system for that. So like when I'm doing documentation, when I'm gonna not answer emails at night. There were some moments when I woke up from nightmares at 3 a.m. because I forgot to add something onto an order for a specialized chair, and I woke up sweating, and then I had to email the vendor at 3 a.m. and I called my clinical lead the next morning. I'm like, I forgot to put the headrest on the chair and I don't know what's gonna happen now. And my clinical lead, who's awesome, was like, OT is not an emergency. Yeah. OT will very rarely ever be an emergency, so it's okay. Yeah, what if that chair gets delivered and you don't have a headrest? So what? They can drop it off the next day. Yeah. What's the worst thing that could happen? Or the kid can stay in the wheelchair as current chair. You know, it's not an emergency. It's okay to make mistakes, and it's rarely an emergency. So don't freak out.
Yeah, and I think it's good to put into perspective that you're always going to have moments in this profession when you're just not going to know stuff. Even if 15 years down the line, you're going to get a new client that presents something you've never seen before and you've never gained any experience in handling. I talk to a lot of my colleagues right now, and a lot of people with a lot of experience, and they say, like, I've walked into so many clients recently that I just had no idea what to do, and they still have to reach out for help. They say some days you feel like the best therapist in the world, and some days you're like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? They don't deserve this treatment, this service, because I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. So you go from 100% to 0% all the time. And I think it's just about being okay with that.
Yeah. And give yourself a break.
Yeah.
You're doing good.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know more than you think. I'm not going to lie. Like, you feel like, I think it's a lot of confidence, right? You feel like you compare yourself to all the OTs around you, and you just trust in the at least the foundational knowledge that you've grasped. Mm-hmm. Like, you know where to access resources, you know how to ask for help, like, and you know the process of what OT is, right? Like the basic, like, intro, assess, treat, you know, discharge, right? Like, it's that goes a long way too, right? But it's those specifics that can kind of bog you down, but just, like, mm-hmm. keep your head above water and keep learning as much as you can and take it day by day, right? It's mm-hmm. You'll get to a place.
I want to reiterate what Emma said about, like, making boundaries for yourself in terms of working, even, like, if you work at a hospital or, you know, some sort of center, like Maya does, like, don't take it home with you. Or if you do, you know, like, that's okay for that night, but just make sure you make time for self-care another night, because it's, without setting boundaries, you're not going to know when to turn it off, and you're going to get burnt out way faster that way. So,
yeah, I think it also really, like, it really depends on your area of practice. I work in a really, really heavy area of practice, and it's been really important for me to really leave my work at work. And even if that means that I stay an extra hour, I get something done, and then I go home and I don't do research on the group that I'm supposed to be planning. That can wait another week. Like Emma said, it's not an emergency. Mm-hmm. And really not, obviously your mind still is on things, but really finding ways to, like, not dwell on those things.
I think something else that I learned in this role too, being in community, is that, like Brett said, you're not always going to have the answer. You're not going to know what the best answer is. Sometimes there isn't even a best answer. But also, you have the skills to observe, and you have the skills to write down everything. And then, even if you don't have the answer then, you can find someone who does. So as long as you have those observation skills, you know how to measure someone if you need to do that, write it all down and find someone who knows the answer or could help you find that answer. Mm-hmm. And also something else I've learned in schools, maybe specific to schools, but you don't always have to be the one to make the decision. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on therapists in schools sometimes because it's always, you know, the therapist is coming in and they always have the answer. It's not true. We don't know the kids as well as the teachers do. We don't know as well as the parents do. So it doesn't always have to be us who it falls on. So don't forget that either. If you're working in an interdisciplinary team, it's not always OT. Sometimes it's OT and PT or the doctor or the nurse or whoever else you're working with. So don't let it fall all on you and don't feel alone.
Yeah, there's a reason why they call it a practice, right? You know, we're practicing OT. So, I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but...
You guys have all made some really good points about being a new grad and, like, maybe not knowing everything. How else do you think that being a new grad has impacted your practice, or specifically, like, having that status, like when other people are like, oh, that's the new grad, they're the newbie?
I think there's pros and cons, obviously, to being fresh in a new career. But something I felt like that's benefited me having that title is, you know, I'll email my supervisor at work or someone else higher up at work and be like, you know, I'm just learning about this. Would you mind explaining to me how to do it? And it kind of gives you, like, if you take ownership of the fact that you are new and, like, you don't know everything, like Brett and Emma talked about to the last point, like, it kind of gives you a bit more freedom to ask more questions comfortably and acknowledge that you might not know and you need help. So I think that is definitely something that I've taken full advantage of, being like, I'm just learning about this. Would you mind helping me out or explaining to me how you go about this, or, you know, pointing me in the right direction for these resources or whatever that case may be. But there's definitely parts that aren't so easy.
Yeah, I think some people are good at using your new grad status as an advantage. I know my company likes to refer me to certain age groups because of my age, in hopes that I'll relate to that clientele mm-hmm. a little better. So there are advantages like that. Again, that depends on the client as well. So it's client by client basis. But then there's also situations where it's like, if it's in my practice, I work a lot with, like, legal teams, right? And my company or people in my company have said, like, maybe you shouldn't tell them that you're a new grad based on how they view that, right? Again, I haven't had any discussion with, like, a legal team about my status, but there's always, like, a little bit of concern about that. So I know it depends on the stakeholders and the situation you're dealing with, but I think there's things and benefits from it, because a lot of times we do have, like, a lot of up-to-date research going into our practice that some clinicians might not have. And so we can use that to our advantage and bring that to our colleagues that they might have kind of lost touch with, because they just don't have time to do the research on their own, mm-hmm. right? Basically coming off of our research projects and other classmates' research projects as well, so.
And I definitely use that, like, new grad status to my advantage with my, I'm working with youth 16 to 24 and very much in that more 20 age group. And I use that when I think it's appropriate with people in my kind of consent process, explaining that I'm a new grad or that I'm new to the organization, that I just have been there a couple months, to make them feel like they also have some control in it, and that if I'm not being helpful, that I want them to tell me, just because my population, so much control has been taken away from them. And so using that to relate to them that I am still figuring this out and I don't always have all the answers and that we're learning this together has been really helpful for me building rapport with a younger population.
It's a good strategy to empower the client to take
therapeutic use of self.
Yeah.
Very, very much so.
But I do find that there are instances where I have to actively kind of avoid the topic of my age or the year I graduated. I do tend to say I'm new to the company, just because you don't, like, in building that therapeutic rapport, you want there to be only trust there, and you don't want something as simple as your level of experience or the number of years or months you've been at a job to take away from that relationship, because at the end of the day, you're still going to do your best for them and you're going to get them the treatment they need. And even if you're not as experienced, I think it's not an issue, but it can detract from the trust they have if they have a negative kind of impression of you as a new grad.
I usually just say, with my population, which they're pretty used to, I think, hearing this, that you don't always share stuff, but I just have a line that I just say, oh, I just don't disclose that to people. I don't talk about my
age.
That's
what I say too.
I don't talk about my relationship status, because they are young people and they're curious and they want to get to know you, but they're also really used to, if you just do it politely and respectfully, my population's super used to hearing, no, I don't want to tell you that.
Mine too, yeah. And I find people are very respectful, clients and, you know, legal teams or whoever, vendors or whoever it may be. You know, I don't feel comfortable disclosing that, or I don't disclose that to people I work with, or I don't disclose that to my clients. Those are all perfectly respectful and great ways to go about that.
Right.
So that's a really good way to set boundaries, especially on a new job. I'm just going to switch gears a little bit here. I just want to ask a question that was posed, and that, what should we know before we're accepting our first job offer?
So that's kind of a funny question, because it's not like as a new grad you have like a pile of job offers that you can kind of like weigh the pros and cons and sift through. Myself and I think a lot of our class saw a job offer and signed it before you, like someone took it away kind of thing, and you just had a job and were like, oh my god, great. But it definitely is important to ask questions and get those questions answered before you agree to something. So in my case, it was important to know about like areas for growth and what the trajectory looks like for going from a casual position to a part-time, or going from a contract to permanent. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking contracts. It's something that we were actually talking about before. It's given me the opportunity to be in a bunch of different areas within the hospital, get a lot of practice knowledge. So even asking about internal shifts within the company, how you can grow as a therapist. And then another big thing is about support and mentorship and what kind of support you can expect as a new grad, because it's so important. Kind of as we've talked about, you feel like you don't know what you're doing, so you kind of want to know where to turn. I was lucky, I had a mentor that I met with every Friday. Just briefly, we went over my caseload, and I kind of outlined my treatment and discharge plan just to make sure I wasn't missing anything, because like Brett said, that imposter syndrome is so real, and you're feeling like, am I giving this person the best therapy and the best approach that they can get? Could someone do this better than me? So kind of just having someone to bounce your plan off of, to be like, no, you're on the right track. I would do the same thing. Have you thought of this? Found that super helpful. So just asking about supports and being aware of what you would need as a new grad, and if they can provide that.
I was going to ask, like, for those of you who have mentors, I don't know if you guys got them, but like, how did you go about doing that? Like, where did you find your mentors?
So under a provisional license, you have to have one. Mm-hmm. So I think the organization has to provide one, if I understand it correctly. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, I can speak to that because I was the first OT. Like, they didn't have an OT. So I reached out to somebody who was my preceptor, my offsite preceptor, mm-hmm. at this role emerging placement. And she was my provisional supervisor, and she's continued to be my mentor after that. So I think sometimes they provide one for you, but in some circumstances, you have to find your own.
I didn't have like a formal mentor, but I met a girl who worked at my company, and she had just been there for longer than me, and we just ended up connecting at one of the first kind of staff meetings, and she put it out there that I could ask her questions whenever I wanted, and I took that very, very full force. And she was so helpful, and you know, like, I bought her lunch once to kind of thank her for like all the help she had given me, because she didn't have to do that. But I think just take advantage, like, if someone offers to help you, take advantage. Yeah, because for sure. They're not just saying that, and if they are, you'll know that right away. But I don't know, just, you know, find the friendly face who's offering to help you.
We're in a helping profession.
Like, yeah.
We want to help people.
OTs are so nice.
That's why you guys are here today.
My mentor was my old preceptor, again, because I got hired for my placement. So she just offered to be my preceptor under the provisional license. And then even when I moved units, I asked if I could kind of have a similar thing, because I moved into amputee care and didn't know anything about amputees. So the practice consultant for ortho amputee was my, like, every other week, just touch base really quick to make sure I wasn't missing anything. And that was super helpful.
That's great.
I think what's also important, just going back to the question of like you need to know before accepting your first job offer, know what you're willing to compromise and know what you're not willing to compromise. So my experience with this, I was offered a job in BC before we were done school, probably in August. And I went through this whole thing where it was the first thing I was offered, and I thought, well, what's going to happen in Toronto? Like, I've heard that it's very saturated. Am I going to get a job here? Should I just bite the bullet and go out west? And so I had to think about, okay, what's the practice population like? And it was something like WSIB, like back to work stuff. Emma, do you really want to work in back to work stuff? No. Emma, do you want a job? Yes. Emma, do you want to move to BC? No. So I kind of had to figure that out myself. And, you know, I'm sure I would have grown to love it, but I ended up saying, no, I can't take this job because I don't think it would make me happy. Mm-hmm. And if it's not something that's going to make you happy, then don't do it, because you're not doing anyone any favors. Mm-hmm. So
I think a lot of times people are inclined to sort of jump on that first job offer. And that kind of goes back to what one of you mentioned earlier too about, sorry, this was off the podcast, so I need to kind of summarize, but about whether you should take a job that's maybe contract or casual or part-time, like, is that okay? Like, or should you wait till you get a full-time permanent? Is that a thing? What do you guys think about that?
I'm shaking my head no.
full-time corn.
Yeah, full-time permanent, maybe that exists, but like Emma said, like, maybe it exists in rural Northern Ontario and in a population that you don't want to work in. And so, reflect what you learn in school. Like, reflect on what you want. You just spent 2 years and a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of stress to become an OT. And think about what's going to make you happy. This transition time is difficult enough as it is. And if you're in a job that now you feel committed to and you really don't like, that's not going to help you.
I do think, though, that that is a really good point. But I do think that if it's, for example, let's say you're hoping to work in a hospital or in another organization that does offer different options like that, such as casual or part-time mm-hmm. or a full-time temporary position or whatever the case may be, I think even if it's not the format you might want at the beginning, like let's say you were hoping for a bit more work, but they're only offering you part-time or casual, I think getting a foot in the door is a good thing. So even if you were hoping for a full-time position, but they're only offering you casual, but it is somewhere that you'd want to work in the future, a foot in the door is a really good idea. So, and then you can always get another part-time job to fill in the gaps with money and stuff like that.
And then you get access to all the internal postings.
Yeah, exactly.
And honestly, that's where all the jobs go in a hospital. Yep. They all go internal, and then if there's no one interested internally, then they go external. Yep. So getting your foot in the door is absolutely how you're going to get a hospital job anyway.
Yeah.
And if you're okay with working casual weekends, then maybe it's a couple months before you get a part-time contract, mm-hmm. and then another couple months before you get full-time. The full-time permanent is very, very difficult
elusive
to get. But if you want to be in a hospital and you're okay with working contracts, then that's absolutely what you can do. And I've enjoyed contract work so far. There's a little bit of uncertainty to it if you don't know if there's another contract coming up or if they can renew it, if there's funding, that type of thing. So it can be hard to future plan, but I guess back to what Emma said, what you're willing to compromise and not. Mm-hmm. Right now, benefits aren't a thing that I absolutely need. I don't have a family, but say change my mind in 5-10 years from now, then that might be a different priority. So I guess just weighing what is really important for you in a job and mm-hmm. and seeing how you can get that.
Sounds like you guys have learned a lot. So going off of that, if you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing that you know now or one piece of advice, what would it be? So everyone has to answer this. We're going to go around the table.
Oh, okay. I think I said this in part one, but I'm going to say it again. And Maya just said it too, but you just spent 2 years working your butt off in this program and learning so much and working at placements full time without getting paid and, you know, putting your heart and soul into it. So one thing that I was told by other people and tried to tell myself but had trouble kind of sticking to was like, relax when you graduate for like a second, take a beat, and don't worry about if you want to get a job right away, great, go get a job. But if you feel like you need a break, that's so okay. And just because your friends and your classmates around you that you're talking to are going out and getting jobs and doing interviews and writing applications and you just don't feel like it right away, don't. I mean, I didn't. I took a few months and I traveled and I studied for the exam without working. And that is a privilege I had that I had some money that I could wait, but it was what was right for me and I don't regret it for a second. So second year, Leia, chill.
Right, Brian.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the advice we are all going to give ourselves. Yeah. I mean, I can't really think of anything super specific, but I mean, you might have to come back to me, but
it's okay.
I didn't really think about this one. Right. Tell your second yourself. Okay, if somebody else has something to say, they can say it.
It's okay, Brett. All good. I think a lot of people feel the same way as Leia.
I agree with Leia. And also, I think that the biggest thing that also, as Leia said, I tried to kind of self-talk myself mm-hmm. throughout the whole program was just have faith. Believe in yourself. Have the confidence to believe that everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and know your first job might not be your dream job, mm-hmm. but think of the positives. It's a stepping stone towards what you really want to do in the future. You're going to find a job. So just have faith and believe in yourself.
Yeah. So. I think going off of what both Leia and Emma have said, that can kind of help you relax. And the biggest thing I've seen is as much as I feel like an imposter and I feel like I don't know what I'm doing sometimes and I'm so uncertain, that's not necessarily how you come across to your team and to your patients. Like, I felt like I was walking around with a sticker on my head that was like, new grad, don't know what I'm doing. But, like, that's not the case, and your patients don't necessarily see that, and your team doesn't either. Mm-hmm. And so just have some confidence in yourself, and everything will be all right.
Yeah. I mean, to echo what everyone else is saying, you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone said that to me, and I didn't believe them. That's fair. And I'm here to tell you that, okay, they were right. I guess to go off the imposter syndrome thing, my mom is an OT who's been practicing for 20 plus years, and she still feels that way, mm-hmm. that she doesn't know what she's doing some days when she goes in to see a client. And obviously she has way more experience to back up herself, but that can be helpful or also terrifying that I'm going to feel this way in 20 years. But that this is, it's valid to feel this way, and everybody feels this way, and it's not just you feeling this way. Because you don't know what you're doing. Because you do know what you're doing.
You have a master's degree. You're smart.
Almost. One placement between now and being done. So yeah.
You're still smart.
And I think for myself, now that I think about it, is like really invest in your other identities. Because I think when you're in school, all you think about is school, right? All you think about is OT. And when you get into the workplace, you have this opportunity to start investing in other aspects of your life that you weren't able to beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, like I think this past winter when I was working, I think this was the first time I played in a hockey league in like 6 years because I had finally finished school. And so, I mean, it felt really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's really important to invest in the other aspects of your life because, I mean, like, I think we all agree with this, like OT isn't everything. Your work isn't everything. I mean, people say that all the time, but it really makes a lot of sense. And it keeps you sane and it keeps that balance alive when you're going through that transition. So think about what's really important to you outside of OT and actually make time for that. Invest in it, your family, your friends, and those people will be the supports for you.
I love that.
Find those meaningful occupations.
Hey.
OT yourself.
I really like that point. I think it's so easy in school just to get so like involved in it and kind of let other things fall to the side. So it's a really nice time that we can kind of prioritize ourselves again, figure out what we want.
Well, thank you guys for being here today. That's all that we have for you for the Q&A session. Thank you for submitting your questions, and thank you to all of you guys sitting here with me now for coming in. I know you guys had work today and you made time. And everyone who's listening, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a rating, comment. We appreciate any feedback that you have for us. I've linked our email below as well as OSOT's new grad resource that has a lot of the information that we've touched on today. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you on the next episode.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.